Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight, the stakes are high. The air outside is thick, and the atmosphere is tense as we await the verdict in the George Zimmerman trial. Again, we find our country divided along racial lines about a case that is not about white or black, but rather right versus wrong. As the prosecution said in closing arguments, to the living we owe respect, but to the dead we owe the truth. The truth doesn't lie. So why are there so many inconsistencies in George Zimmerman's story? Yet, he may be found guilty of a lesser charge. Tonight, our topic is the George Zimmerman trial, when the evidence isn't enough. We here at Center Stage call for calm, regardless of the outcome of this trial. We know and understand God is ultimately in control. A reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. So tonight, y'all, we're going to start at the very beginning. We're going to go back to the non-emergency call that George Zimmerman made on February 26, 2012, when he reported Trayvon Martin to the police as a suspicious male. Take a listen. And for some reason, we're having audio problems. I apologize. We're going to try this again. Okay, for some reason, y'all, of all days, we're having problems with the boards. A lot of strange things have been happening. My Facebook account, they reduced somehow to the size of an ant this week. Blog Talk Radio removed all the – I'm going to say Blog Talk Radio because I can't figure out who else could have done it. Removed all the George Zimmerman pictures. I'm not even certain. I did not check before we went to air this evening whether or not the photos are showing up today. But I know a lot of the George Zimmerman photos were scrubbed from the web this week on Facebook. You were limited on the number of photos you seem to be able to put up in certain places on Facebook. And that's another thing we're going to talk about tonight. Okay, y'all, the audio is not working. Now, call it what you will, but I find that suspect. Some would say I'm a conspiracy theorist, but last week they were working, the week before they were working. And today, for some reason, audio isn't working. Isn't that strange? But you know what? Center Stage does not fret. We just keep on moving because ultimately we have the facts in front of us, and that's what we're going to begin with tonight. Okay, some of my guests are not on the board tonight. I don't know where they are, but we're going to move forward anyway. We're waiting on Dr. Zoe Spencer. We're waiting on Jake Quervo, and we're waiting on Thelma Tormina to still arrive this evening. We're not certain. We've confirmed with each and every one of them that they would be a part of the panel tonight, so we're not certain. We're going to refresh our screen and make certain that everyone is showing up on the boards because earlier my own number was not showing up on the boards. So we're going to go back and refresh the screen and see if that changes anything. Give me a second here. Okay, let's try one thing. Let's see if the phone lines are going to open this evening. Hold on one second. Once we did a show in which it was a very controversial show, and the phone lines jammed. They absolutely froze up, and we were not able to get into them. So we're going to pray that that's not the case tonight. We see a lot of very strange things going on with the boards. But ultimately, as I said earlier, God is in control. That's all that seems to matter. So we're going to go in. Kay Quinn, can we open your phone lines this evening? Good evening.
Hi, how are you, Carrie?
Fine. Very strange stuff happening tonight, Kay. But
I'm here.
Oh, God. And you know what, Kay? This is the thing. I'm not a panic person. I mean, sir, I don't push the panic button very often. And so tonight, I definitely do not plan to do that because I listen to closing arguments, and I am very impressed with what I saw. What did you feel about closing arguments today?
On which side? Are we talking about, today?
You know what? Both sides. Start wherever you want. You can start with the defense or the prosecution.
I tell you what, I absolutely love the prosecution opening, and I love the way they finished. But the way the defense finished his prosecution, I mean his defense with, let's just let him go on with his life. That was that was so despicable for him to say that. And he, the really sad part is, Carrie, he meant that.
Wow. You know, I found, if we're going to talk about the defense closing, I found O'Mara to be strong consistently throughout the trial, and I really found him to drop the ball in closing. I was absolutely shocked at his closing. He seemed very, I don't know, way too lax about everything. He just kind of seemed like, in my opinion, you know, here's a bunch of graphs. You know, y'all take them back and sort through them. You know, this guy's not guilty. You know, so this.
Yeah, they
this
were very arrogant, very confident in knowing that they just feel like they're going to get an acquittal. Nothing,
you know,
no
I think I thought that until I watched him watch the closing rebuttal, and then I wasn't so certain. Let's start at the closing first. I think Della La Rionda was wonderful. I think he absolutely hit the ball out of the park. I mean, it was crazy how many points he drove home in letting them know that there's a lot of inconsistencies in this guy's story.
Yeah, and did you love the way he skipped across the courtroom? He just skipped along. Like, I thought
that was very dramatic. That was very dramatic. And, Kay, I think you agree with me on this, and we want to put it out there. You know, I've had something happen to me today, in fact. I'm not sure if it's related to this trial or not, but, you know, whatever the case is, I think hate is hate. And I don't think this show has done anything different than CNN, HLN, Rush Limbaugh, or any of the others have done in commentating. I basically talked about the show. I have not spewed hate. As far as I'm concerned, I do have an opinion. Maybe I shouldn't have voiced it, but I feel like, you know, it's my show. And so
right,
I did.
Exactly.
And that said, you know, if whatever happened today was directed at me as a result of this show, oh well. Because this is the way I feel about it. The system, it did work today in terms of George Zimmerman was given, in my opinion, a fair trial. Now, what happens after this is up to the, after that is up to the jury. You know, and so I think the system absolutely worked. Now, will I feel it's broken if he's found not guilty? I really do. And I feel that because
absolutely.
I just feel like, to me, you know, even though they say the burden of proof is on the state, but at the same time, if I have reasonable doubt that this guy is not telling the truth, to me that says he's lying. And so to me, if he has to lie, then that means to me he's probably guilty. Now, I don't
think
those are the closing arguments that they gave the jury tonight, was there, or this evening?
No, well, basically what Mr. Guy was saying and what they left with on the note was, you have to listen to your heart and your common sense. And if it doesn't make sense, if it's not reasonable, because he tried to go into what a reasonable doubt is. It's okay to have doubt if it makes sense. But if you have a doubt and that doubt is not reasonable, meaning it just don't come together, it don't make sense, then you can't say he's not guilty because you have doubt. Because that doubt is not reasonable. It's not reasonable for Trayvon Martin to turn around and say, I'm going to kill you, MF, or you're going to die tonight, MF. That's not reasonable. And it's not reasonable for him to want to attack George Zimmerman when he was running away from George Zimmerman. So it's okay to have some doubt, but that doubt has to be reasonable, and it has to be within the whole criminal effect. It has to fit some kind of way.
I agree. And, you know, and I think this, I think that when I looked at the trial, you know, for what it was, a lot of people have brought up the fact that they thought that the Department of Justice shouldn't have gotten involved. Well, let me tell you something, folks. If the Department of Justice doesn't get involved on a case like this, when do we think they should step up?
Exactly.
I was dumbfounded when people were saying it, and I thought, well, the Department of Justice shouldn't have got involved. Really? And then I start to think about it, I go, well, when is the Department of Justice supposed to get involved in a case? They're supposed to get involved in cases where there's injustices, y'all. And so George Zimmerman, in my opinion, should have been arrested earlier. And so the Department of Justice probably had to intervene because the system down in San Francisco,
they were going to sweep it under the rug. They wasn't going to do anything about it. Had they had not got involved. It was definitely going to be pushed up under the rug. You know, Zimmerman's father isn't a former judge, so he can just make a few phone calls and make sure nothing happens. And then, Carrie, I'd like to submit, too, that that's probably been Zimmerman's problem all along, because he's been able to get away with all of these little bitty crimes that he's been committing, and they've been sweeping them under the rug, you know, and charges are not filed. Well, the charges are filed, but they're not sticking. And so it just progressed. It progressed to murder. So if he
Go ahead. I think you're probably right. I think if somebody who really know George Zimmerman were to tell the truth, I believe it would probably go back a decade of things that George Zimmerman, or better, of things that George Zimmerman's father has probably gotten him out of, you know, mm-hmm. due to him being privileged to be a part of the system down there. I think that George Zimmerman probably has got some stuff out there that probably has gotten expunged, if you will. I'm just assuming that y'all... That's not anything that's backed up by facts, but I just don't think a man gets to this point and commits a murder, you know, if you will, or kills a man, if you want to call it that, kills a man.
It's a murder. I'm okay with murder because that's what it was.
Well, you don't
chase somebody in the dark.
You
chase somebody in the dark and you following them with a gun and a flashlight, and then the persona that they're trying to portray, Carrie, is like, well, he's so afraid and he wouldn't attack anybody. Then that's why he had to have the gun out, in my opinion, because he was afraid and a little wimpy guy, and he's not going to go in the dark with just a flashlight. And that gun made him bigger, taller, and he felt, you know, braver. And that's why he went after him. He wouldn't have gone after him if he didn't have the gun. There's
you
no
know,
doubt in my mind about that.
I was so disappointed in watching the guy. I'm sorry, and he loses me. The older guy with the gray hair. I've forgotten his name. I don't remember if he was a medical examiner, coroner, or what his. He was one of the final witnesses. But you know, he made the point of explaining how Trayvon Martin's hoodie had to be wet, and because it was wet and it had an iced tea in it, then that's why it caused it to hang a certain way. So that's why the bullet went in as it did. To me, that's ridiculous. There's no mm-hmm. evidence of just how wet Trayvon's clothes were that night at the time of the shooting. So if George Zimmerman, only the back of his clothes was wet, why would we assume that Trayvon Martin's front of his clothes had to be that wet? Is it a possibility that Trayvon Martin's front got wet because he was laying on wet grass for a while before they picked up the body?
Because he was laying on wet grass. Exactly. He was on wet grass for at least 2 to 3 hours before they picked up the body. And it didn't matter to me that Zimmerman's back was wet. He was in the rain outside. It's not like he was sitting in the car. He was in the rain. It was raining. So, of course, his back is going to be wet. So that didn't matter to me. I do believe they did roll around. There was a confrontation. But Trayvon was entitled to defend his life. And he was the one.
You know what I think? I think about that
himself.
About that rolling around. I think the rolling around was really minimal, if the truth be known. And I think it really wasn't that much on the grass, because Trayvon's clothes itself didn't have the mud stains and the grass stains. So I really mm-hmm. think if I had to call it, and I didn't say this last week, I think the altercation took place standing up. And I think they got to the ground when Trayvon's body hit the ground. And I think George Zimmerman was seen on top of him because he did that police move where you handcuff a dead person. And I think that's what we saw when somebody said they saw somebody on top of somebody. They saw George Zimmerman, by his own account, on Trayvon because of that. But I really question, you know, that I really believe the bullet went in the way it did because he was pulling on Trayvon's hoodie at the time. And I think that's why the bullet mysteriously went underneath the button.
And did
otherwise,
you notice, too, that the prosecutor pointed out how, you know, the two strings that hang from the hoodie, one of them was, like, extremely long. I said, wow, I missed that before. I didn't see that. One of them was hanging like you know what I'm saying. It was really long. The other one, no one walks around like that. So I wished I could go back and see the video at the 7-Eleven or at whatever store he was at so I could see if those strings were like that, because I don't believe they were, because the prosecution pointed that out.
You know, and it just seems like to me it's just two little grass stains and mud stains on both the victim and the shooter. And so I just
Very quick. It happened very quick. If you look at that timeline, it's really quick what happened, because a lot of the altercations, Carrie, happened while they were standing and confronted and going back, because one witness, I can't remember her name now, but she said she heard them arguing. She couldn't make out what they were saying, but it was like a real dominant voice, and then a softer voice responded, and then a dominant voice. So he can't argue that I didn't have time to introduce myself, you know, because I was stole. He stole me. So that, you know, that's just impossible. So I'm hoping and in prayer for that, the jury is going to see through the lies and convict him of murder too.
You know, speaking of the timeline, that 4 minute dramatics today, I was thinking, what in the world? I mean, first of all, anybody who's taken the time to learn the timeline, it wasn't 4 minutes. That window is really about 2 minutes from the time Rachel Gentile phone disconnected from Trayvon Martin and the time the shot was fired. It wasn't four
right.
minutes.
It was two minutes, and he
can't.
Yeah, and he can't account for it, but the phone records of Trayvon Martin, they do account for those very same 2 minutes, ironically, that he can account for. Now, this is the time period where Zimmerman said he was going, after he hung up, he was going back to his car. But it would take him less than 10 seconds, 20, let's just give him 20 if he's out of shape and obese and walking slow in the rain. It would take him 20 seconds to get back to where he was, and it took over 2 minutes. So, and then when they questioned him about, well, you know, what happened in this 2 minutes, I don't know. Well, you need to know. This is important. Well, what he didn't know is Trayvon is on the phone, and they can't account for those 2 minutes. He was talking to Rachel Gentile, who said, you know, this guy is following me. I think I lost him. He's behind me. You know, we know the words he said. He's right behind me again. So we know where the 2 minutes were. He had no intentions of going back to his car. That's why he told the police dispatcher, just have him to call me. I'll tell him. Because he had no idea where he was going to end up. Exactly.
Well, you know, another
exactly.
thing, speaking of that timeline, and when he was on the phone with Rachel Gentile, we know the kids love their toys. And so he's a kid. He's talking on his phone. Do you really think he was fit to confront somebody and start a fight before he pulled out his earplugs, just like the prosecution said today? Do you really think he wouldn't have said to Rachel Gentile, hey, I got to go because I'm fit to go take care of business? He didn't do that, which kind of indicates
exactly.
he did not see that altercation getting to that point.
He did not, and because who does that? If I'm getting ready to fight you, I'm not fixing to have earbuds in my ear and a conversation on the phone. Who does that? Nobody. Nobody does that. So,
he would have thrown the ice tea on the ground, all of that. He would have pulled out his earplugs, and he would have got ready to get busy. So
just thrown it on the ground, Carrie. It's a full can. If I really want to do some damage to you and I know I have that, I could use that and hit you upside your head with it. If
that's
I really
right.
wanted to hurt you, he didn't. It
and
was
that kind of
neatly
it
tucked
gives
away
you a little bit of a more of an understanding that Trayvon didn't see how serious this was. But Zimmerman, in my opinion, entered into the dark with some type of intent anyway. Now, is it possible that George Zimmerman went into the dark, not identifying himself, and Trayvon became defensive, which he had every right to do, whether that was verbally defensive or physically defensive towards George Zimmerman, and it began. But either way, George Zimmerman was the aggressor, because he never identified himself, and all the contact where he had an opportunity to, when he was talking to the 911 operator and he said that the Trayvon Martin was coming to him, I question that ever happened. But let's just say it did. That would have been an opportunity, in my opinion, and they didn't mention this today in closing, and I wish they had. Wouldn't it have been wise, since you got 911 on the phone and you're the neighborhood watch, to roll down the window and say, hey, dude, I'm with neighborhood watch and I got the police on the phone. What are you doing here?
Exactly. Exactly. Not only that, Zimmerman's mind, Carrie, was already made up when he got out of the car. When he saw Trayvon, his mind was made up. He's a thug. He's one of those buttholes. He don't need to be in this neighborhood. So when he approached Trayvon, he pushed him and asked him, what are you doing around here? So of course now it's defensive. That's the argument. So that's the argument he had with, that the witness heard, you know, the dominant and the little voice and the dominant voice, because that's what he was doing. He had all the time in the world to introduce himself and to say who he was. He had that wasn't his plan. That's not what he was going to do. That's not what he set out to do, and it's not what he did.
You know, and I was very I don't know. I was just like lost when the defense put on this whole thing about why didn't Trayvon go home? He had 4 minutes to go home. Well, this is where I'm at, people, and pay attention. What law is it that said that Trayvon had to run home? I mean, first of all, he was walking, he was talking on the phone, he was minding his own business. So why is it that the defense made this big argument about he should have been en route to home? He was en route to home. He was talking
on the
phone.
Yeah, and I have two follow-up questions for that. So why didn't he go home? One, why was he not allowed to? And two, why didn't Zimmerman go back to his vehicle?
And you know,
this is simple.
Oh, and I agree with that. But the thing is, if I really thought somebody was following me, I really don't think I would. I mean, I've had people follow me, trust me, y'all. And I don't take them to my destination. I go this street and down that street and another street to make certain, okay, is that person really following me? Because I want
to
make certain
to
that
make
I'm not
sure.
taking
yeah,
this
to try to
my
lose
home.
Them. And that's what he tried to do. He tried to lose them first. And even one of the detectives said, he's hiding from you. He couldn't have made it home. He's hiding from him. Trayvon thought he had lost him. And but when he, here's one thing that I think, you know, bits and pieces of the truth just happens to slip out. I really do believe Zimmerman did go all the way down because he knew in his mind that those guys always try to exit out of that back gate. He went all the way down past the T, back to the back side of that street, and came up, and he came in front of Trayvon Martin because he said, I was going towards him. He slipped up and said that. That means you cut him off. And you start coming up to him. So if y'all got into an altercation, that's why he wants to act like, well, we were at the T. No, you probably wanted to get back down to the T, but you were running. Remember the witness said she heard that running from left to right? That was Zimmerman. And he wants to act like he's not, you know, in shape. And that was Zimmerman. And he cut Trayvon off. So that's just how I feel. So when he'd look around and say, man, he is right here. He thought he lost him. At least that's what he told Rachel, that I think I lost him. And now he's right here in his face. So he's like, why are you following me? You know, what are you doing around here? So, and then the altercation occurred. But like I said, Trayvon had every right to stand his own ground. But what they want to make you think, Carrie, that like back in the Jim Crow area, you couldn't cross a bridge at a certain time. So it's 7 o'clock. He's black. Why he even outside? Why he outside? He should be at home late at
night.
Well,
you know,
it's
ridiculous.
Late at night.
But it's ridiculous to say that absolutely I know everybody in this complex and who visits everybody in this complex. So if I don't know you, therefore you don't belong here. That's ridiculous. Okay, it looks like
Karen, no one knew him. Many of the witnesses that they asked, they didn't even know him.
Exactly.
They did not know him. So if you're going door to door and passing out flyers and introducing yourself, you have to know that there are black residents in your neighborhood. Your neighbor, the lady that came on in the hospital bed, I don't know what she had going on with the oxygen tank, I believe it was. She was his neighbor. So you know that there are blacks in your neighborhood. So, but every time you see a black kid in your neighborhood, you're going to call the police. They have to be suspicious to you. That's a depraved mind.
Listen, which probably had a lot to do with some of the drugs that he was taking. As we said, y'all, he was on temazepam and Adderall, which are both known to be
I knew he was on psychotic medications. I didn't know which ones. I truly wasn't aware of which ones.
Temazepam and Adderall, which are they call hallucinations, mood swings, agitation, aggression, just to name a few. Okay, y'all, if you just tuned in, you've come center stage tonight for the topic, the George Zimmerman trial, when the evidence isn't enough. Why wasn't this an open and closed case? Why are there so many inconsistencies in George Zimmerman's story? Why did police take so long to arrest George Zimmerman? And why was the prosecution talking about murder three and manslaughter when there was so much evidence presented? Y'all, that's just a few of the questions we got. But we see our guests, some of our guests have arrived this evening. We see Ms. Thelma Tormina on the line. Good evening, Thelma.
Good evening, Carrie. How are you?
I am good. We see another two numbers that I'm not familiar with. We're going to open up the line. If you're not a panel member tonight, can you take your hand down just for a second and then raise it back after I found my panel under the board to jam? And so I'm trying to find my panel on the board. Let me try 716-715. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hey, Gary, it's Chris.
Hey, Chris, how you doing? I'm good.
Good. I hear you guys huffing and puffing and running your sentences together. You know what? It doesn't matter. Even if they videotaped it, if they're going to acquit this guy, they're going to do it.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Acquittal is a dangerous word right now. I mean, like I said,
it really is.
Air is thick and the atmosphere is thin.
Well, you know something? I'm not. A lot of people talking about rioting and fear of rioting. No, we should do what the Italians and the Jews would do if this were happening to them. You make the principal person disappear.
Oh.
That's all. You don't have to do all that. You don't have to do all that rioting. You ain't got to do all that acting crazy. Whoever did the deed, make them disappear.
I just called.
That's a thing.
Don't you dare say that on this show, Chris. No, we're calling for calm, y'all. Let me go to 111, a block number. Good evening. You're on center stage. Are you one of the panelists? I opened the line of a block number. Good evening. You're on center stage. Okay, we're going to close that line back up. We're not sure who we picked up. Okay, the phone lines are acting crazy. Thelma, are you there?
I'm still here.
Okay, so you know what? There was a debate today on Facebook, y'all. Thelma has a friend by the name of Sarah or somebody. I don't remember her last name. But Sarah had a very big problem with Thelma coming on the show, and she wanted to know, Thelma, I want you to tell me now which side are you on, because I'm going to draw the line as to whether or not I'll follow you here. And I thought that was very sad, Thelma. I thought that your friend not wanting you to be a part of the panel was a sad commentary.
I didn't see it. What did she say?
She posted it on your page. She first of all had a problem with the fact that I posted a picture of Trayvon Martin that she said showed him to be 13 years old. I said, I don't know how old he is. It's just the picture that I felt was best for the show, so that's the one that I posted. So then she went on to say that, you know, she had been invited to the show, I guess, by you on your post, and so
right.
She was wanting to know whether or not you were, what side were you on? She really wanted to, and which I thought was very strange, and she said that she was a big fan of yours and a supporter. Thelma has her own show here on Blog Talk Radio, y'all, by the way, and she's founder of the 912 Group, and she felt that you should not be a part of the panel tonight.
What?
You know, and I told her, I was very clear. I said, you know, Thelma's done center stage before. You know, we're not going to fall out. And I want to make that clear. Thelma is Caucasian, and I am African American. Thelma and I have agreed we will not fall out, no matter or regardless of the outcome of this trial. We didn't kill anybody. We didn't shoot anybody. We're not on trial for killing anybody. So we're not going to fall out regardless of what happens tonight.
I have a question for Thelma, because I didn't realize you were Caucasian. That's good to know. I am African-American, Carrie. My name is Kay Quinn. I just want to know, because this case seems to be divided down racial lines, just straight down the middle. So I kind of want to know where you stand.
Where I stand is it's before a jury who's sitting in a courtroom listening to all the evidence, and I stand with whatever they come down with. And the sad thing about all of this is that this particular case got all kinds of publicity, and the reason being is because this is what the DOJ, and I heard what Carrie said earlier, But they've put it out there, and your so-called civil rights leaders have stirred the pot enough to get African Americans angry over this situation, and they're using it, and unfortunately it's working. That's what I see. And
well,
I think it's really sad.
Why is it our so-called civil rights leader? Why can't it just
be civil rights leaders?
Because even if you had an issue being a Caucasian woman, if you had an issue with civil rights, you could contact him as well on your behalf, because he isn't a black civil rights leader. It's a civil rights leader. So I'm just curious as to why it had to be prefaced with your so-called.
You think Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton would be on my side?
If you had a problem with civil rights,
no.
I absolutely do, Thelma. And do you think they would not? And if
yes.
so, why?
Because I've walked the face of this earth long enough to watch these two men, and unfortunately, they divide the communities. They don't bring them together. They never have, and they never will. They never will.
Mm.
And it's extremely sad. Carrie and I have had this conversation many times.
Yeah.
I'm not prejudiced, and I never have been.
But
I've
you don't have an opinion one way or the other as far as guilt or innocence regarding, although you've seen the same coverage that we've seen, but you don't have an opinion one way or another.
Yeah, but wait a minute. First of all, don't assume I've seen the same coverage that you have. To be perfectly honest with you, probably not,
because I don't watch Fox.
Well, don't do that. You know, we don't want to shoot Trayvon. We don't know what happened. Well, we know we have a clue as to what happened that night. But we don't. That's what we don't want to do, is fight amongst ourselves and divide ourselves about a trial that none of us had anything to do with.
And, Carrie, and I understand that, but please understand, it's just hard for me to accept that somebody that knows anything about anything regarding this case don't have an opinion formed. So when somebody is just not being truthful, well, it's just a jury, I don't have an opinion one way or the other, I just don't believe it. And you may not, Thelma,
if she called this show, she's got an opinion.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. But now you don't want to be truthful with it. And that's the problem that I have, because I understand a lot of Caucasians, they will hide it. They have an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't want to say it. Here's an opportunity for you to actually say it.
Well, I think Carrie would vouch for me. I think Carrie would vouch for me. And if Thelma has an opinion, Thelma voices the opinion. What I seriously see going on is that this case is being used, and it's being used to divide the races, which is absolutely ludicrous, because in reality we have come so far.
The race is already divided.
No. It's getting worse. And quite honestly, I don't have any ill-feasance towards black people, Hispanic people. I don't care what race you are. You're a human being. It doesn't matter to me what color you are. We got a lot of us, and I mean a lot of us, got past all of this a long time ago. And this type of racial animosity did not exist in this country the way that it exists at a palpable rate when before Obama took office.
They have used
every single racial issue that they can to divide us, and I'm tired of being divided. As far as I know, the people on this phone call are Americans.
Mm-hmm.
I am an American. Because you are a fellow American, you are no different than me. You have the same rights, and I would stand up for them tomorrow or tonight or whenever. I am really very concerned because the division is there, and you can tell it just on this telephone call.
And I don't want that. Yeah, because really, you know, I meant that when I called for calm, regardless of the outcome of this trial, because I think, you know, the worst thing we can do is divide ourselves along racial lines, you know, about something we didn't have anything to do with. We didn't kill anybody. We're not on trial for killing anybody. And we shouldn't do that. We really should not look at this as black or white, but rather right versus wrong. And I've said that repeatedly.
Doctor, you on the line? Your line is open. I am.
Okay. Okay, Jay Corvo. I think this is your line. Good evening, Jay Corvo.
Hello. Hey.
Okay. So everybody's here tonight. Okay. Okay. Everybody's. Good evening, Jay.
I was screaming.
but y'all heard these the debate back and forth. We shouldn't divide this along racial lines, should we?
Can I go first?
It's
Jay?
Already divided
yes, go ahead.
Racial lines.
No, well,
exactly.
But hold on a second. I do want to say something, and I am definitely an activist and a revolutionary, but I think that the worst thing that we can do is to begin to invoke our own stereotypes and our own perceptions and generalizations on the woman and begin to attack the woman simply because she said she was Caucasian. And I think, you know, when you're dealing with race relations, and then I want to go back to Trayvon, but when you're dealing with race relations, I think the most critical thing is that we have to be open to receiving people's information, to receiving their perspective, and not badging our perspectives or our opinions about their perspectives on them. I think that's what keeps the lines of communication open. And I think when it comes to race relations, racism, discrimination in America, I think one of the critical things is that people are afraid to talk about race because people get sensitive, and then we start to attack each other instead of attacking the issue. So what I don't want to see happen and what I don't want to be a part of is I want to hear what everybody has to say about the issue, because the issue is the issue, the truth is the truth, and it's going to remain. And it's at the point where we start to badger each other or put each other on the defensive, either way, that's the point where we fail to understand where other people are coming from. And so I wanted to put that out there first and foremost. I'm sorry. I have to.
Well, there's two issues with this case. This case has
two issues.
This case has two issues.
Hmm.
And you can take either or. I can't say which is one and which is two, but it's race and it stands your ground.
Absolutely.
Right. And you stand your ground by itself says go back to race. You know what I'm saying? Stand your ground says see race. All right. So whether it's stand your ground is one or two, stand your ground is out there saying see race. All right. So who's benefited the most from stand your ground? Even in New York State, we've had our own variation of stand your ground. We had a guy named John White, who was a black man, black family man who lived in Long Island. He was assaulted. His family was threatened by a mob of white youth. He went on the porch and blew one of them away. All right? Mm. This is a successful businessman, okay? And you know how things are in New York City. Okay? They completely construed everything around so as to make him look like the offending party, and they sentenced him to jail. And fortunately, David Patterson gave him a pardon, a couple of years ago and let him out early. But they wanted this guy. They wanted this guy who had the audacity to blow away some Long Island Italians who were threatening him on his property, on his porch, okay, and, blow away some young, bratty, loudmouth kid who was threatening to rape his wife and, you know, assault his family. So who just about in any race, especially the South, who does stand your ground work for? In the words of Austin Powers, who does number two work for? Okay. If stand your ground is number two, then it is race is number one. All right? So it's about race, and it's inescapable. And I'm finding it very strange that people are being punked out of saying it's about race. And when Zimmerman was that's all he was thinking about from the first split second he laid eyes on Trayvon. All right. So let's not be ridiculous about this. It's all about race. When it's about race, don't run away from
it. Well, can
it's
I interject? I know I'm just coming in.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. First, I wanted to introduce myself to the lady who was speaking earlier. Is her name Thelma or Thelma? I'm sorry.
Thelma.
It's Thelma.
Okay, yes, I'm Jay. I was listening intently, as you were speaking, and it was just really like, it touched me for real. And a lot that you said was relevant. There's so many different points. And I know Dr. Gibbs and you were listening as well. Even when, hello?
Okay.
We can hear you.
Is that it?
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Y'all can hear me?
Whenever
okay, yeah,
we do really controversial shows, just I'm putting the PSA out there, y'all. Whenever we do really, really controversial shows, all kind of stuff starts to go haywire. Just putting that out there, but go ahead.
Look, isn't that what Snowden is escaping the country for, all of that spying and all that kind of stuff like that? But, I was listening intently. There were so many points that you had spoke about that I felt like I couldn't even address them all right now on this long call, and I think Dr. Z would agree with me in regards to some of the stuff you talked about politically, in regards to the president, other things, about the race baiting that's been going on in the country a lot recently. I'm not going to point fingers and say, who, and I don't think you did. I don't think you tried to, I'm going to clear it up, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you weren't saying it's Obama's fault for, like race baiting and everything that's going on in the country. But it's an issue that really did take rise and became more prevalent in a sense when, he did get put in office. And I think that's for more reasons than one. But in regards to this case, when you have people on TV like, and I'm just going to, name drop a little bit, like Frank Tafti, I don't know if y'all been following on some of the various shows. He's like George Zimmerman's best friend or whatever. And it's like, he's really like a very, he's an extremist in my opinion when it comes to, and I hate to say it, correct me if I'm wrong, but white privilege. He really gets on TV. And, I mean, if that ain't white privilege that I've never seen in my life before, I mean, I don't know what it is. It's just some of the stuff that comes out of his mouth can be offensive to people. Mm-hmm. Well, to us, when you hear it, it's just so, I'm just trying to think of one thing.
He incites.
It's race baiting. It's insightful. And they purposely put him up against somebody else on a TV show who will be black. One time I saw him, against John Murray, Miss Shahara Ali, there's various different people or whatnot for them to kind of go back and forth. And I think that's what you were talking about as well, how the media is perpetuating that race-baiting mentality. And in regards to the media, it's like the media serves multiple purposes. And the first purpose people need to know, the first thing is to try to convince you that this is the reality. Then it's to entertain you or whatever like that. And that's to kind of like, to distract you or whatnot, but it's to try to convince you. And I really think that everybody needs to kind of see the bigger picture, like what you were trying to point out, that, one, we all should be perceived as Americans with the same rights and this and the third. Do we all feel like that? No. And I mean, I can express that, from my side. And I'm not saying that it's like, I think the beautiful thing that Dr. Z said is we need to all learn to attack the issue and not each other. And one thing I've learned just with these types of conversations, it gets real, sensitive, and people do start attacking individuals. In regards to the case with Zimmerman and with Trayvon, unfortunately, the reason why race is an issue with it is because after this case is done, it becomes the new precedent. It becomes
exactly.
The new law of the land.
Exactly.
You have, like, your Brown versus Board of Education. You hear the laws, you hear the name like that. You have, Dr. Z, you put on your Facebook the Trayvon Amendment or something to that effect. And however this case goes down, it's going to need a lot for,
Can I jump in there, Jay? I think that's what a lot of people don't understand about why black people are so passionate about this particular trial. I think it's because when they came up with the cliche, I am Trayvon Martin, I think that's how all of us feel, because we really feel like if they allow a grown man to kill a child for nothing, what does that mean for us? So I think that's what a lot of white people don't understand about our passion about this particular trial.
Like, I saw something on Facebook, and I mean, social media is the new, norm of this generation. It's their major way of communicating with the youth and everything else. And there was this video, and people, and, you read the comment sections of certain things. I don't know if you all saw, but it was a video of some police officers who had, killed a dog. They
yep.
shot the dog. It was they were arresting a man or yes. questioning a man. His dog ran up to the owner playfully. You saw the tail wagging and stuff like that, and they shot and killed the dog. There were more people sympathetic towards that dog. I mean, I love animals. Don't get me wrong. Peter, don't come for me. But, you know, I love animals. But there's more people sympathetic towards that dog's life. That dog
yeah.
deserved to live. This and this, 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 versus, well, Trayvon was in the wrong place. He had 4 minutes to get home. Why he ain't make it there? Like, you know, it's like, are you serious? He had 4 minutes to do whatever the hell he wanted to do. Excuse my mouth. I don't know if I just crossed the line or not in your face. But he had 4 minutes to do whatever he wanted to do. If he wanted to stand there in the dark and just get wet, he could.
Yeah.
He should have been able to do that.
Can I say something?
Can I jump into?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
Can I wanted to jump into because I think I wanted to go back to what I believe Chris said. And, the issue, and I wanted to disagree with what Thelma said. And I understand that, you know, that experiences and perceptions are people's reality. And the issue
mm-hmm.
is that white people have to understand that black people come from a history of lynching. Black people come from a history of racism that is not too long ago. And a lot of people don't understand that because that's not their reality. We come from histories of black men being murdered by white citizens, hanged by white citizens, dragged on the back of trucks by white citizens. And so this reflects our reality. So when we say that, you know, I am Trayvon Martin, and when we get impassioned about this, this is because Trayvon's issue is not isolated. It reflects a resurgence of history. And stand your ground laws, if they're not put in perspective, and I have argued and I continue to argue and I continue to fight for the repeal of the Stand Your Ground Law and Castle Doctrine, because what it becomes is it's not applied properly is a neo-lynching law. It becomes
exactly.
a law where fear, and people have to understand, and I think we get to reality when people are able in their own experiences to take themselves out of their experiences and understand somebody else's. There is a presumption of fear of black men, period. And it's driven by the media, it's driven by the news, it's driven by the urban media that we support. There is an automatic presumption that a black man who does not conform to European standards, for example, a black man who has on a hoodie or who wears pants sagging, is automatically presumed to be a thug. I'm a college professor. I tell my students all the time, I'm going to need for you to pull your pants up. But because it's my reality that understanding that all black men who embrace their urban culture are not criminals, then I don't bring with me that perception of fear. Now you introduce a law, and you have to be careful. We got to really understand what this law is saying. And the judge, when she read it today, made it very clear. The Stand Your Ground law is about the presumption of fear. The fear, she said it, the fear doesn't even have to be a real fear, but it has to be a reasonable fear. Now if you have white people who do not have interactions with black folks, and all they see or all they know about black men, as an example, are the things that they see on the news, then the presumption of fear is very real for white people. Now you give a law that says that if I have a reasonable fear or a reasonable presumption of fear, then I can use deadly force in order to protect myself. People have got to understand what that means. And with reference to Trayvon, it's basic logic. If anybody follows an individual, I'm a woman, I'm a black woman, I'm from the ghetto, and I think I can fight, but if anybody, white man, black man, whoever, is following me in the dark, I am going to have a reasonable fear. If I try to get away, and culturally, I mean, you know, the black folks on the panel will probably know, if somebody is following us, culturally, we're not running home. We're not going to bring the person to the place where we live, lay our heads. So if someone is following me, I'm going to try to get away. I'm going to try to, we call it dodge them. I'm going to try to dodge them and get rid of them, shake them before I get to my house. But if someone follows me and then they come up on me and they grab me, the Stand Your Ground law applies to me first. So I mean, with logic and following the logical pattern, and this is what I want, you know, conscious-wise, where I want the discussion about race to begin, is that we have to understand Trayvon Martin has been systematically denied his right to defend
himself. To stand his ground.
When George Zimmerman ran up on him, and he said it. The girl said, "Why are you following me?" That establishes it. So when George Zimmerman puts his hands on or he approaches Trayvon Martin had a right to defend himself. If Zimmerman's head, if he bashed George Zimmerman's head, this is Florida law, and this is what I told the state of South Carolina. If you want to flip the law and make the law not applicable to black people, then put that on the book. But don't try to systematically and subjectively change it when it doesn't apply to you. This is what this case is about.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
How do we know who laid hands on who first?
I'm appealing to your conscience.
I understand what you're saying to me, but I'm asking you.
This is the law.
By the phone call that he was on, the witness that was talking to him on the phone.
But even aside from that, how about if you're walking at night and a guy in a hoodie is following you, and you're walking at night and a guy in a hoodie is following you, and you're trying to get away, and he's following you. You're going to have a reasonable fear. And if the person approaches you, you have a reasonable fear. It doesn't matter who put their hands on who first. If I have a gun, and this is the law, I didn't make it up. The law says that if you have a reasonable fear that the person poses an imminent threat to you of great bodily harm or death, you have a right to defend yourself using deadly force. That's what the law says. So at the point where someone is following you and you have a reasonable presumption of fear, you have a right to defend yourself. What happens is that the attorneys attempt to switch it around and take away the reality that Trayvon Martin didn't know him. So Trayvon had the right to fear George Zimmerman.
Yeah, except for that's not really logically true. If you stop and you think about it, it's not logically true. And I live in Texas, which is a concealed carry state, which is, it's a good old boys club down here. And the truth of the matter is that unless someone lays hands on you, you do not have the
law. And that is exactly not what the law says, and that's my point.
Yep.
And that's the reason why black people and people, not black people, I'm going to say conscious people, because it's not all black people, and I know a lot of white people, when we were protesting, most of the protesters at the Trayvon, many protesters were white people who were aware. I'm going to say conscious people need to step up, and they need to attack the law, because there really is no ambiguity in the law, but there's ambiguity and subjectivity in the application of the law. It doesn't matter who touched who. If you have a reasonable presumption of fear and someone is following you, you don't have to wait for them to touch you to defend yourself.
You don't even have to have an injury, if I could just interject there, because you're making a very valid point. Not only do you just have to have a presumption of fear, you don't even have to have an injury.
No, you don't.
Because they applied that to Zimmerman's case, if you remember. That was applied to Zimmerman's case to try to make his self-defense logical. They had tried to apply that to him, but it was never applied to Trayvon's regard.
Well, let me ask, have we all lost our common sense?
What do you mean?
I mean, as Americans, have we all lost our common sense? Do you mean
with the law?
In terms of, it doesn't matter if we were a society of human beings that really cherished one another's life,
absolutely,
and we lived in freedom the way we are supposed to live in freedom, then where is the common sense here? Do you think the jury doesn't have common sense? Let me ask you this. If you're walking down the street and somebody's following you and you may feel a little bit uncomfortable, but they don't touch you and they don't do anything but ask you a question, are you going to turn on them and start beating the crap out of them?
Just for a second. But Thelma, this is it. First of all, it's dark outside. I don't know you and you don't know me. So if you start you start pursuing me in a way that I know you are intentionally following me. This is a dangerous world we're living in. Trayvon is a teenager. He had every right in the world to be in fear for his life. I mean, because actually he was being pursued. I think some people would call that somebody stalking you. When they're following mm-hmm. you everywhere you go, then they go. That's a reason to be in fear.
That's right.
And I quick person, if I could just interject real quick, because even if get on an elevator, black men get on an elevator with white people, they're already afraid. It doesn't mean that, you know, I just wonder, where is that fear coming from?
Well, I was going to say, you know, the energy, it was funny because I was about to touch on what you were just saying from a psychological perspective, and Dr. Z, if you can correct me if I'm wrong, or if you know some of the terminology, if you could, if you want to interject, but there's, you know, everybody, we call it personal space. I don't know the psychological term in regards to it, but there's different levels of personal space. When you're like my family, my immediate family, you can get into whatever that closest layer of my personal space is to me without me feeling uncomfortable. Usually people that you don't know, there's a certain amount of seats that once they get too close to you, your alert goes up. That's why on subway, trains, and elevators, think about it. People you don't know, we don't make eye contact with them because you're invading their personal space. You make eye contact with a stranger.
Who does that?
This is the thing. If you're getting on the subway and you're sitting down, the majority of people are sitting there. They got their earphones in, something, reading a book, trying to distract themselves. Go to the subway in D.C. in New York somewhere. More than likely, people are trying to distract themselves and not trying to sit there and engage in a random conversation with a stranger next to them on the subway. Now,
that tells
doing
me
that.
Something's wrong with society. Doesn't that tell you that?
This is the thing. This is a psychological thing. It's more so, if you think about it, we're all creatures of creatures of nature. It's just like with an animal. Like, that's trying to be funny with a dog. You get too close to a dog that doesn't know you, his tail goes up. Like, wait a minute. You know, and it's the thing with us, if we don't know a person, it's like, okay, you know, I don't know you. It's a psychological perspective. Now, in the dark, in the rain, at the age of 17, being followed by somebody, and you're on the phone with your friend, and your friend even joking, like, well, they might be a rapist. You better run. You're scared. You're scared. And when somebody gets too close to your person, but you even reach out to touch my shoulder, from a psychological perspective and in the dark, I don't know you. And more than likely, not trying to be funny, and there's no evidence, it's circumstantial, this is me, but I believe he had that gun out already, but say he did it, say he didn't, whatever.
I believe that, too.
It's enough to invoke fear in him, and let alone the fact that he's a minor. He's 17. Somebody will argue, well, 17 is only a year away from 18. Guess what? He was only 17 by, like, 3 weeks. His birthday was, like, 3 weeks before that. So in reality, he's like a 16/17-year-old, in my opinion. If he was 16, would it be any different? Would you look at him as a child then? That's saying you, but in general, the people who are criticizing the media trying to call him an adult, try him as an adult. He was only 17 by a couple of days.
Yeah, 21 days, exactly.
Can I interject too? And this is, you know, this is my thing, and where I'm very proud of myself, because, you know, I am an activist and I deal, you know, most predominantly with issues in my own community. But I am very, very happy to say that even as an activist and as a black woman from the neighborhood, I can honestly say that if the situation were reversed and Trayvon were a 17-year-old white kid, and George Zimmerman was a 28-year-old black man, and the exact same situation happened, I can honestly say in my soul that I was equally incensed, and I would definitely be out protesting with the white folks to get the black man locked up for stalking this little boy and murdering this little boy. And I think, you know, I think a part of the race break is that people are not willing to acknowledge the difference and the disparate treatment that black people have suffered in America since we got here in
1619.
Ooh,
can I interject right quick?
Oh, no. Here we go.
So I wanted to interject real quick.
Hold on. Jay, hold on 1 second. Okay. And that's the point. That reaction, that's the point.
What,
because
mine?
I don't know who it was.
But the reason why I say that is because, and every time I come on Carrie's show, I try my hardest to get the black population to really, really learn the true history of this nation. Because if they did, seriously, because if they did, they would understand that, first of all, they didn't all come over here as slaves. And a lot of them were free when they came over here. And a lot of this prejudicial and racist crap that happened in our country, yeah, there were slaves that, but the first slave, the first black man was owned by another black man. Most people came over here as indentured servants, and they worked their way to freedom. And
can I interject, it's
a long history session. Please let me finish. But the truth of the matter is that the history that we have been taught as a nation is not true. It's not accurate, and it doesn't reflect the truth about our nation. Race didn't come back into a horrible situation until Woodrow Wilson resegregated or desegregated or did segregate the military. It was Woodrow Wilson and the progressives that started this nonsense. And I know
we're getting,
a lot of people don't want to hear that.
A bit.
No, Carrie, can I just say
yeah, Carrie, can I interject? Because I wanted
can
to piggyback on what the
first?
Professor
what
said.
Can I say one thing first? I have to correct it. Thelma, you don't know me, and I don't fit my credentials, but I have a Ph.D. in sociology, and my emphasis is race, class, and gender, and African-American studies, and what you just stated is completely incorrect. I have studied history, and I know it well, and yes, you may be right that there may have been a few people who came here free, but when you talk about the institution of enslavement, you cannot use the exceptions, the very few exceptions, to eradicate the 400 years of bondage that African American people have lived in. I mean, and the power dynamics that have come from the construction of race. So I first wanted to say that what you said is absolutely and factually false, and then second, to just reiterate that you cannot use the exception to deal with the rule of the institution of enslavement and the purpose of enslavement. Okay, that's all I want
to say. Oh, well, I just wanted to interject because I really like what you said about if the tables or the roles were reversed and if Trayvon had been a 17-year-old white male instead and Zimmerman a black man, I can guarantee you without a doubt that they would not vilify this little white kid. They would talk about, like Trayvon's GPA, they would talk about his 3.7 GPA. They would talk about how many 600-plus hours of community service that Trayvon did. They would talk about all of his works that he's done, and they would not vilify him. It's like this isn't even the George Zimmerman trial. This was more of a Trayvon Martin trial.
Absolutely.
He was on trial. He was a dead man, and he's on trial. And it was just ridiculous. You would not see that if the tables were turned. And it's really, really sad and disheartening because it's all based on the skin, whether you want to admit it or not. And the skin is so thin. It's so thin.
Okay, can I jump in here just a second, y'all, because I'm very, very, very perturbed right now. First of all, my show is going into podcast and we're still talking. Okay? I've been doing this over 3 years, so I know y'all know I know how to book a show by now, right? So I don't know what the Rett Center stage is to what's going on, but be for real, folks. If it is a problem with people dialoguing about the trial, I mean, if George Zimmerman is telling the truth, nothing Center Stage says over here should matter. Okay? I mean, because the truth, if we got a jury that's going to go into that jury box and do what they're supposed to do, then why is Center Stage an issue? I'm sorry, the audio was scrambled, the phone lines have been scrambled, and now
oh,
I'm
no.
in podcast? I mean, really?
Oh, Carrie.
Okay, really?
Wow.
I mean, I'm just being real. Dr. Zoe Spencer's been on my show many times. Thelma Tormina's been on this show many times. I know y'all know I know how to book a show by now. Okay?
Yeah.
Why am I in podcast? And we're in the middle of the show. But just putting it out there, y'all, listen, Center Stage don't back down. I'm sorry, I'm not going there with you. I'm not intimidated, and I won't back down. Okay? I got a brick thrown through my window of my property today. I won't back down. Okay? So do what you do. Okay? Whoever you are, if y'all want to scramble it, do what you do. But at the same time.
I got your back. I got your back.
I am so frustrated right now because this is not the way it's supposed to be. I'm sorry, if the system is supposed to work, George Zimmerman has been tried through the system. Whatever happens is up to those six people that's sitting in the jury box. Nothing that we're doing over here on Center Stage should matter. We're talking about what we saw during the trial. We're talking about race relations. I'm sorry, CNN is on there talking about it. HLN, ABC, NBC, CBS.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a break. Give me a break.
But they have
a lot
of conservatives on there, too. You may need to
I guess
some
because the majority of us are black and we're informed and we're talking about the George Zimmerman trial, there's an issue there. Give me a break. So just putting it out there, listen, I don't back down and I ain't scared. So to me, it's a sad commentary that we're breaking this thing down in terms of us versus them or black versus white. Or it should only be about right versus wrong. If George Zimmerman did nothing wrong, why are people already in fear and the jury has not even returned with a verdict?
Mm-hmm.
Give me a break, y'all. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. Two nights ago, I put this in God's hands. I said, listen, I you know what? I can't worry about it. I was consumed at first because I realized, like I said, I am Trayvon Martin. And I realized if George Zimmerman was able to kill that young man and get away with it, that could very easily be me. And I felt that with everything in me. But at But at the same time, I realize God is ultimately in control. And if George Zimmerman walks tonight out of that, wherever he is, a free man, he still has got to meet his maker, period. And justice will be served ultimately, period. And so whoever has not got their mind wrapped around that, I'm sorry for you. Okay, y'all, that's all I got to say on that.
Terry, the only thing I want to say is, with everything you said and everything that you're coming up against, you know, and there is evil out there. I'm sorry, there is. And in all reality, I'm here because you know I love you and I really like you and we really have good conversations. And you know damn well that I am not prejudiced in any way, shape, or manner. Never have been, don't want to be. But what the bigger comment here is this one trial, and I understand where you all are coming from, but I need you to try to flip it around just a little bit. This one trial has been put in the bullseye of the public arena. It's been put there for a reason. And the animosity that it's causing, it is up to every one of us that is on this call and anyone who is listening to change that animosity. It doesn't matter what happens out of this trial. What matters is that we stand together. Huh?
It doesn't matter to you what
happens. No. You
trial.
Misunderstood. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that Americans, we have got to find a way to rise above the fervor that is happening and find a solution so that we live together as Americans and this kind of stuff no longer happens.
That comes also, Thelma, when white people stop trying to get black people to see things the way that you do, and that you all also meet us in the middle. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And you're saying that it doesn't matter. It does not matter to you, because what Trayvon represents as a young black male in a racist culture that has the presumption of fear of young black males is not your reality. And I listen to you. Until you can step outside of your reality and understand that your reality is not everyone else's, until you and other people who don't understand race can understand the peril that black Trayvon Martin is a representation. He is, and the reason why the outrage came is because Trayvon Martin was a representation of what has been happening to black boys since the beginning. He's not the only one, and he hasn't been the only one since he died. There have been other young, innocent, unarmed, young black men and white men, middle, lower I've worked on the cases, who have been shot down for absolutely no reason, and their murderers have gone uncharged and unaccountable for blatant murder. Let me talk about Mark Howard for a second.
I want to interject one thing, only because...
And y'all, we got to go to the phone line.
Stated,
go ahead. Make your point.
What you stated isn't exactly true. When you assume that I don't know what the symbolism means or what it means to have Trayvon Martin.
If you did, you wouldn't start your sentences always, and I've listened to you because I'm a listener. If you understood, you would not begin your sentences with what you think that we should do. And that's your perspective. You're trying to change somebody else's perspective. If you understood, you would be more open to meeting us in the middle and being able to understand and receive, and then think about, you know, I think we need to focus on what we need to do, and I think white folks also need to take accountability to focus on what you all can do to change the conditions in America as American citizens as well.
When I say we, I mean Americans. I don't mean colors, and I don't mean that I'm telling you. I'm saying that we as a people need to find a way to rise above this. I'm not saying you have to take all of my culture in. I'm not saying I have to take all of yours. But there's a way to meet in the middle.
I agree. Listen, y'all, a reminder, if you just tuned in, you come center stage tonight for the topic, the George Zimmerman trial, when the evidence isn't enough. We want to know, why wasn't this an open and shut case? Why are there so many inconsistencies in George Zimmerman's story? Why did the police take so long to arrest George Zimmerman? Why was the prosecution talking about murder three and manslaughter when there was so much evidence presented? You have a question or a comment, call us up at 347-850-8390, then press 1. We want to know your thoughts today. What did you think of George Zimmerman? You have any comments about Trayvon Martin? What did you think of the Sanford Police Department? And really, what do you think the outcome of this trial is going to be? What do you think the verdict is going to be? We're going to go to, let's see, the phone lines keep moving. We're going to go to 714-952. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Yes, hello. I'm Titus. I guess I'm on that Trayvon Martin thing, and I was kind of looking at the trial today, and I really did enjoy the closing arguments, but they did lack some things because it is a racial issue. And George Zimmerman, you know, what's so silent about this? It's like having high blood pressure and not being treated for it. I live on the West Coast in California, and Southern California at that, and here where we live, there is actually severe racial tension at the level of the Klan's people back in the 40s and 50s between Hispanics and blacks. We even get jobs. I live in one of the richest counties in California. If you broke it off from the United States, you could make a state out of it in Orange County. And they have so much displaced the American workers here in this county. And Obama has come here, God bless him. He has come here several times to raise funds and never stopped to talk to those people pushing baskets, laying on the streets. And there are people being beat out there now in the streets, and they're black and white Americans. And I agree with her when she says we should not be using terms like ethnic terms when we attach it to Americans. We are American citizens. I had a chance to visit another country. And do you know that in France you're just a Frenchman, no matter what color you are? No matter what race you are, they don't say black Frenchman or white Frenchman. And that's a political term that's being used here to separate us. And I believe that we need to come together and get our representatives to do something about this classing of people. Because if we can all be Americans, this Trayvon Martin thing won't happen. George Zimmerman is a Hispanic child that was raised by a woman who married a white man, a racist white man at that, and I say that based on his demographic area, where he came from and his upbringing, and she accepted his ways because he took care of her children that she already had when she came into the marriage. But that didn't eliminate the stereotypical views that this child already had instilled in him. Presented as a white guy because of his last name. With this every day here. So we're looking at it on the West Coast like, this is just another Mexican guy who killed another black guy, and they're using this group of people to do what they cannot do, because in this state they're becoming minorities, and so they need assistance to carry on, or ill will, if you will. So that's where I'm at with this. I think it is a racial issue because, like I say, the silent killer is being used, and that is to use another group of people to represent that same old Jim Crow, Jimmy Lynch mentality.
Right. Listen, one question for you, caller. What do you think the verdict is going to be? What's going to be the outcome of this trial?
In my heart, I believe that they're going to find him guilty of manslaughter. One, because, you know, those people, they have to live there in that state. Those
Ooh.
People are married, family members, and they don't want to go against the will of the people there. And I don't mean all of the people. I mean those people who sent money to George Zimmerman for his defense.
Mm-hmm.
That group of people still exists. Why? God only knows.
Wow. Thank you,
caller.
Go ahead.
I believe he'll be found guilty of manslaughter.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, caller. We're going to pick up someone who's showing up as a name, B.C. Watson. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank you all for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Here's what I think. I think it's going to be a hung jury. And the reason why I believe that is because you got six different rumors, six different backgrounds trying to try a case with conflicting testimonies from both sides. So I think that's going to cloud judgment. Two, I agree with the gentleman said that those jurors have to live in a community, and I think they're going to pass the buck. I think they're going to be like, I'm not trying to deal with this. I'm not trying to get my house firebombed, anybody like this. And be honest with you, I think it would be good for the country right now if it would be a hung jury, because either side, if you're on Zimmer's side or if you're on Trayvon Martin's side, somebody's side is not going to be happy with a guilty verdict. There's going to be negative ramifications from either side. And so right now, we need political officials to basically cool down the attention that's taking place right now, because this country is about to explode on one
that.
Side or the other. And I'm praying for a hung jury. And if there is a hung jury, I pray. Seriously, I would seriously pray that we got community leaders, government officials come together and bring this country together. Bring this country back to the center where it was back in the Clinton years. Because right now, since Bush got in office, it's extreme right, extreme left. Everybody's one for the. It's like everybody's against each other right now. And it's been like this since, you know, we had Bush in office. You had these neocons get in office and had this political agenda going to war and all of that. We've been in the same state since then. And so I'm just thinking right now, for the good of the country, I'm hoping for a hung jury.
Well, let me ask you something, caller, for the good of the country.
Mm.
But what about Trayvon Martin?
Well, for me, for Trayvon Martin?
What about justice for Trayvon Martin?
I'm not sure what you're getting with asking me with Jayvon Martin. What are you probing for?
I'm saying if they come back with a hung jury, what about justice for Trayvon Martin?
They can reappeal it.
They'll
retry it.
I mean, but you know what, y'all? Seriously.
It's
you know, that's scary. Because that would say the system has failed. If you're saying that they went through all of that, spent all that money finding a six-man juror, I think they found six jurors and four alternates. They went through all of that, and they couldn't find anybody who was bold enough to stand up and say what they really thought. Are you really serious?
I mean,
the system would have failed then.
I honestly believe that there will be a hung jury looking at the evidence, looking how poorly the prosecution presented its case.
Wow.
The defense.
The prosecution poorly presented its case.
No,
were you looking
did.
At the same closing arguments that I looked at today?
Because
yeah,
the defense made a solid
trial,
point.
During the trial, though.
The defense made a solid point for self-defense. They did.
Okay.
They brought in, they brought in people that was able to back Zimmerman on his injuries, on the physical locations and the conditions and all of that. They did exceedingly a good job in doing that.
But you know, and I'm sorry, and not necessarily in rebuttal, but it's also, it actually goes along with what you just said. One of the reasons why I think, and I'm not giving an excuse to the prosecution, but I've been highly critical of them as well. I mean, I feel like they really did do a mess of a job. I think they did a great job in the closing arguments from what I did catch up on and their open arguments. But I think one of the reasons why the prosecution really was struggling. I mean, it was like they entered with a handicap because the only witness, their client, was dead. And the only story they could go off of was Zimmerman's story, because any other story they would have created would have been speculation. So they kind of had to play the role of the defense by trying to disprove why the defense wasn't doing self-defense. They had to disprove Zimmerman's claim of self-defense. They didn't really have too much of an alternative story without being called for speculation on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I look at it like...
But that's
look
true
at it like,
of
you know,
any trial.
That,
thank you, caller. Right. It's like you said, that's true with any trial. I mean, really. So... The system would have failed us, y'all, if they come back with a hung jury simply because I think there was enough evidence and enough inconsistencies for them to come up with a verdict. I'm sorry. And
Gary,
if you were too cowardly, I'm sorry, let me put it out there. If you were too cowardly, and I'm going to say it like that, because there was an out. All you had to do was get up there and act crazy, and they wouldn't have chosen you. Seriously. All you had to do is get up there and answer all their questions wrong, and they would not have chosen you. So why would you put yourself in that, put your butt in one of those seats if you were not going to stand up and do the right thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know what, Carrie, before this conversation, you know, maybe it's my own use of logic because, you know, you're on my Facebook post, Jay, you've seen my Facebook
right.
post, and I think that I have, you know, looked at the trial very objectively. And I, before closing argument, actually even before the defense put on its case, I said then that I knew that the defense was going to make a motion for acquittal. And I actually felt like, you know, I know the judge is not going to do that for political reasons. But after the prosecution put on its case, I honestly really did not think that they had proven their case. And for real, I would not have been angry and or shocked or surprised at the judge or at the system if the judge had granted the motion for acquittal. After the defense came on and put on its case, I think that the prosecution was able to use cross-examinations and recross to pretty much strengthen its case. It
right.
was not until closing arguments that I felt that the prosecution did what they were supposed to do and what they should have been doing during the entire trial. And this is where I think that racism and white privilege comes into play. Because you have white attorneys attempting to deal, and that's the reason why they didn't prosecute in the first place, Jay, what you said about disproving. That was their foundation, that we don't feel that we have enough evidence to be able to disprove a claim of self-defense. And so as I watched them struggle through it, and even during the closing arguments for the prosecution, I stood up and gave an ovation because for me, as an objective thinker, I was like, okay, well, I understand that you gave the best that you could. You did. You're talking about Rachel Jontel. You're talking about Shipping Dow, you know, because they don't speak proper English. Then we're challenging their intellect or their ability to think and process information. All of this racism. And until this conversation right here, at the end of closing, I said, if you follow logic from 7-Eleven to Trayvon laying in the wet grass, if you follow the pattern of logic and you include, which you must, the beginning, because it doesn't begin at the point of altercation. It begins at the point that Zimmerman decides to follow Trayvon. And if you follow that logic and then appropriately apply the law as it was presented by the judge, you would have to find George Zimmerman guilty of at the least manslaughter. Now, this is because I'm not sure that they proved the depravity of mind, and it depends on
exactly.
how you're defining depravity because, you know, depravity, I don't know if he was necessarily depraved, and I don't know if anger necessarily or that level of hatred or feeling like you're just represents depravity. But if you follow the logic and apply the law, the jury would have to find him guilty of at the least manslaughter. But then after this conversation, I realized that people are the product of their experience.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have white women on the jury who are unable to detach themselves from the reality that Trayvon Martin, hey, there's a possibility, you know, everybody in their model care what anybody says. Everyone who is not black, comfortable with the prospect that Trayvon Martin turned around and started beating George Zimmerman up. I don't believe that Trayvon Martin took any of those bruises on George Zimmerman. But all I know, the white man came out and punched George Zimmerman in the nose to try to help him out.
Oh, he did it with his flashlight.
Oh, my God. Okay, this is why this conversation doesn't work. You can't throw stuff in there that isn't proven or isn't evidence.
You're absolutely right. And that's my point exactly. Because if as you stated when I gave you the information, you know, well, we don't know who put whose hands on who first. You can't just walk up on somebody and then you turn around and you beat them up. That's what's in the mindset, people's mindset. And if white people can't separate themselves from the possibility that Trayvon Martin never put his hands on George Zimmerman, because mm-hmm. George Zimmerman could have been Trayvon, he could have grabbed Trayvon, and Trayvon's trying to get away, and they both fell on the ground.
It connects very well. And please, just let me interject real quickly. And that's right back to the point of the truth. When this conversation first started out, when I was asking about how do you feel, what is your opinion, and you didn't have one. But then later on in the conversation, well, how do we know who hit first? So obviously
Why does that show an opinion? Because someone asked a question. I'm serious when I ask you. I haven't been glued to the TV watching this. I haven't been. It's not something that I have been so fixated on that I have had to watch all of it. I haven't. I've been, you know, I mean, I get my news from other places. I don't necessarily pay attention to all this. There's so many things going on in our country right now that you can't watch everything. So I honestly asked a question. So that makes me have an opinion?
Well,
because you're trying to clarify?
No, Thelma, no. Believe me, it doesn't mean that. But it's just definitively the way you ask the question. How do we know who it's the way you ask it, which indicates that.
I suppose because I've been there before where there was a gun in my possession, and let me tell you this, it was a white man on my property, and Carrie knows the story well. And
yes.
I know the situation of being in a position of fear and being the lesser of the two. The fact of the matter is, first of all, I don't think I've even seen the most recent picture of Trayvon. So I can't make a judgment about that young man one way or the other. I don't know how tall he was. I don't know how muscular he was. I know nothing hardly about him because all they've shown is this picture that was taken of this young man when he was, what, about 14 years old?
No, that's not all he's shown.
I was actually trying to interject earlier, but I know I let Dr. Z speak, and it's some things I just want to touch on real quick. They've shown pictures of him since then, because, again, he had his birthday prior to that, and they showed the picture of him at his birthday party with his family standing up. He was quite a tall young man, but it has nothing to do with anything. The same
but
way
yes.
they try to come in there, and this is my thing real quick, they try to come in there and bring evidence and try to say that George Zimmerman couldn't throw a punch after he'd been taking MMA classes for about over a year, a little bit. But this man who's never been able to fight has assaulted a police officer and has done assault and battery on his wife before, and that's proven evidence for anybody who wants it.
Assault is an iffy thing. Assault does not mean you actually connected with anyone, and assault does not mean that you really hurt anyone.
That's exactly what assault is.
Now,
we're going back to the phone line, area code 817-797. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Hey, what's up? I'm listening, and I just had to push one because I just want everybody to stop one minute because everybody's talking over everybody else. But see, imagine this one thing. Imagine that there's a procedure that the police are supposed to follow in an incident such as this, that they didn't follow. So it leaves the prosecution very few things to follow because the police was trying to get him off in the beginning. There was only one policeman they wanted to arrest him. So they left the prosecution no recourse but to wait for the defense to come up so they can refute the information. Because there was different information taken by the police that rendered this whole situation as far as a logical progression of events.
Anybody disagree with that?
I do.
I don't know. That's why we criticize Serena.
Okay. Who said I do?
Me.
Okay, go ahead,
and the reason being is because the officers were there on the scene. They made the judgment that they made.
One officer, wait a minute. You keep
let her
doing
finish.
That.
Let her finish.
Wanted to arrest him. No, one officer wanted to arrest him.
Okay, so one officer did, but the other officers, and apparently there must have been more than one, decided no. And from my own situation, I can tell you the DA usually makes the call. So it's not like there was a vacuum here where departments weren't talking to each other. They are talking to each other all the time. Why that call was made not to arrest him, I don't know. I also don't know the race of the officers. Have no idea. That's the same reason why I asked the question. Did somebody lay hands on somebody?
Aren't you the one that said race didn't be a factor?
I did, but I'm just saying I don't know. I don't know the answer to any of those questions.
You can't have it both ways.
Do you know the answer to those questions?
Yes, I do. But I'm saying you can't have it. I'm saying you can't have it both ways.
Why don't you share the information?
But that's what I'm saying. You said race shouldn't be a factor. But then, what is the race of the officers?
It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be.
But you just said you didn't know the race. So only point I'm making. See, we're still not making the point. The point I'm making is one officer wanted to arrest him. When they got to the precinct, the overruling officer wasn't at the scene, decided not to. So
and why was that?
He was probably speaking with the father, who was a former judge.
You know, they all connected.
I'm saying one officer deemed it necessary that he was arrested for this crime. But if they didn't follow procedure, they left the prosecution no recourse.
Does anybody know how many officers were at the scene that night?
No, there were quite a few, Thelma, but we know ultimately the decision rested with the chief of police who ultimately resigned after this, so we do know that.
Right.
You know, from a lot of static, from him
but
not following what a lot of people felt like was the right thing to do. I mean, you know, let me ask you this. Let's just put race into it for just a moment. If this had been a black man who had killed a white child, do you think he wouldn't have been arrested that night?
Proven. There was a 70-year-old black man.
I didn't hear the answer. I'm sorry. I missed it.
Because I didn't get a chance to give it. My answer to that is I don't know.
Ooh.
And I really don't know. I'm not quite sure. And logistically, I mean, seriously, people, I'm trying to make logical points here. If the white young man was a lot bigger than the black gentleman that may have shot him, then I would say it should have been the same outcome as what has happened to date, except for this would not be an issue if it had not been blown up by the federal government. Everyone needs to ask themselves why.
Is size really a factor when one person has a gun and the other one doesn't?
It was over 50 pounds heavier. Let's not forget, Trayvon is only 158 pounds. This Zimmerman was 204 pounds. So we're talking about the bigger
person.
He wasn't
that big back then.
Yes, he was. And can I tell you how we know he was? Because when he went to the doctor the very next day to get a release to go back to work after being in the fight of his life, he's going back to work the next day. They took his weight. He was 204 pounds.
Okay.
And he had taken MMA classes. So, you know, we know that he knew self-defense. We know that he had a gun. You know what I'm saying? And we know that he knew the neighborhood. So, in all things equal, Trayvon may have had height on him, but I think that's just about all.
Carrie, can I answer your question, though? Because it was proven. The answer to your question in Florida has already been proven. It was a week or two after Trayvon Martin's death, or it was after that because we were getting ready to go into protest. It was maybe a couple of weeks after Trayvon Martin's death. There was a 69-year-old, and you all can look it up, there was a 69-year-old man in Florida who was arguing with a little kid about riding his skateboard on the basketball court, and he was like the neighborhood watch guy. He's just in front of his house. And there was a Marine, an ex-Marine, who was on the playground or on the court with his daughter. When he saw the black man telling the other little boys to get off of the basketball court with his skateboard, the white man confronted the 69-year-old black man. The white man, they got into a fight. The white man and the man's daughter testified in front of the grand jury and said to the grand jury that her father was sitting on top of the black man with his hands on his neck. And the black man shot him, and he got arrested and went to jail right away.
Mm.
Fact.
I mean,
now,
you know, really, we would be fooling ourselves, seriously. I mean, this is like a mute debate. I mean, really, we're going around in circles. We really know what would have happened if this had been the other
we
way
know.
Around.
Bama
yeah.
doesn't know. We know.
Okay. I mean, I'm just saying. So we can move on with that one. I mean, I'm just saying, y'all, we got a whole lot of ground to cover, and we know that for the most part, and Thelma's, you know, been around for a minute herself, she knows that in the South that black person would have been in jail. I mean, that's just a given. So we can all pretty much probably agree on that. I mean, really. But the thing is,
I don't know.
Okay, we're waiting for the verdict, y'all. We're waiting for the verdict. You know, they didn't come back right away like I thought they would. The young man earlier called in and said he thought it was going to be a hung jury. What do y'all think the verdict's going to be? I want to hear from each of you all tonight. What do you think the verdict's going to be? Dr. Zoe.
I would like to think that it is going to be manslaughter, but I'm not sure. I mean, after the closing, I would give them second degree, but I would like to think that they will be conscious enough and objective enough to come back with a verdict of manslaughter at the least. But I'm not sure. I won't be surprised if they acquit him.
Did anybody hear about one of the jury members during the last closing argument by the prosecutor? One of the jury members was actually in tears. They said.
Something that I heard today that I was very surprised by. Y'all tell me, you know, I still want to hear what you think the verdict's going to be. There were 6 jurors picked and 4 alternates. Or let's just say there were 10 people picked. But you didn't know that you were going to be an actual juror until they finished the trial and you were sent back to the jury box. That said, that seems unfair. Because you know what that seems like to me? That somebody sat there and watched every expression on your face and then decided if they were going to include you or exclude you. Did anybody catch that?
No, Carrie, it probably would be a draw because the thing that happens with a lot of trials is usually you have 12 jurors and 2 alternates, and the alternates don't pay as close attention if they're alternates. So
but they didn't
more
know.
Than likely
that's
it was a draw. I don't think anybody gets to choose who the juries are. I'm sure it's a draw. It's just a matter of the names being drawn, and then you're part of the jury. I don't think it's
No. They said you did not know. Okay? So
yeah,
that
you
means
probably
when,
didn't.
When they sat through all of that testimony, they didn't know if they were a juror or if they were an alternate. I thought the process was
sure.
You knew that you were an alternate.
I thought they knew they were alternates.
There could be someone sitting there watching every expression on the jury's face and then deciding, okay, I saw this one nod at this particular point, so we're going to exclude them because they look like they would be leaning this way or that way. I think that's kind of unfair. I'm just saying.
I had a list of the jurors in the alternates, you know, and they're listed by numbers, and they had all of the information, well, bits and pieces of information of the actual jurors. And then they had the alternate. So I think the jurors knew.
Right.
No. Listen, y'all. I would not be quoting this on my show because I like getting my facts right. Trust me. This is what they said today. Who was I watching? I got this off of Orlando. I was listening to WESH, WESH-TV in Orlando. They were quoting this. This was part of their commentary team, one of the attorneys. That's how they do it in Florida. That's scary stuff. Because that means 10 people sat there not knowing if they were a juror or not, and they did not find out. They said until the moment they got ready to go into the jury box, that's when they said E number 2, you're an alternate. E3, you're an alternate. That's how they chose them. Look it up.
Okay,
y'all.
Oh, really? When you go into the jury box, though, the alternates, I don't believe, sit in the same boxes with the jury.
No, that, okay, y'all, somebody go Google it for me. Please go Google this. They said everybody sat there, and they didn't know until it was over when they got ready to deliberate who was going to be chosen and who wasn't. That's scary stuff, because I remember somebody, one of the commentators said at some point, juror number so-and-so was nodding her head when the defense or the prosecution said this. Well, that's scary. So that means that person looks like they were an empathizer with whatever that attorney was saying, which could either include them or exclude them from the jury.
No,
does that make sense?
No,
Somebody got a computer. Google it. But I'm trying to tell you that was said today, and I was taken back by that, because that says to me that somebody's playing God, because I don't think they just randomly, when you get ready to go in the jury box, say, okay, 1, 2, 3, you're not going. I think it's more strategic than that. I'm just saying, just putting that out there, just throwing that out there, y'all. But anyway, so y'all decide. But I wish somebody get on the computer and Google that. But I just heard that today, and that let me know that this thing could be more what do you call it, tailored to a verdict than we realize.
Carrie, yes. I think I wanted to clarify, because I hear what you're saying. I don't think that is exactly the case. I think that the attorney and the judge already know who the six are going to be,
mm-hmm.
and who the four alternates are, but then they don't tell them who's
okay.
going to be who until the end, so that they keep it objective and so that everybody pays attention, everybody takes notes, and then they'll let them know at the end who is going to be the actual jurors and who the alternates are. So they
you
know.
Might be right. It's just the way they phrase it, it
yeah,
sounded
exactly.
more like
yeah.
They didn't know. Which actually, think down. About this, though. It really could be more of the same, like I said, though. If you don't know going in, they could flip it on you.
Well, no, during jury selection, the process of jury selection is real critical. Neither the defense or the prosecution would go for that, because that means that, you know, somebody likes to be excluded or what have you.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
they're not going to switch that up like that.
Yeah.
Okay, y'all, listen, we're going to see by the end of this trial. But anyway, okay, y'all, I was asking y'all about the verdict. Okay, Jay Cuervo, did you give me your verdict?
Actually, I didn't.
Okay.
My verdict, honestly, and I'm not piggybacking at all, but it goes alongside with Dr. Z's verdict. I honestly, my reason why is following the trial, you know, touching on something simple real quick. I know earlier somebody was saying about how there's two things that this trial represents, and one was race and the other was stand your ground. But another thing is basically it's like a social thing. And I think morally and socially, we're all like, why isn't he guilty? Why isn't he guilty? Why isn't this open and closed, open and closed? Legally, I don't see second degree. This prosecution didn't give that to me as bad as I wanted it. I see manslaughter, that's there. If he doesn't get manslaughter, or if it's not a, I mean, I don't know. I say manslaughter, but we will see.
Okay, what did you think when they threw the murder three in there?
I felt like it was desperate. I mean, and, you know, somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I felt it was like a desperation, because at the end of the day, if you know what you want to go for a person, they weren't confident enough that they had sold on second-degree murder. So I felt they were trying to put as many lesser charges in there so he could get something. And I kind of felt like, almost disrespected, not personally, but kind of like, y'all weren't prepared. You were kind of, you expected him this. Let's get it. It just seems so last minute, because said it was like child abuse. It was, wasn't it like a murder? It was the murder plea for child abuse or something?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, but that wasn't argued throughout your prosecution. You can't just throw that in there. Like, I mean, and I understood where they were going with it. I wouldn't have minded if they had argued that throughout their case, and that was one of the things they had mentioned prior to them prosecuting. I just kind of, it just seems so wishy-washy, but I really, you know, I'm hoping at least for manslaughter minimum.
Okay, what do you think the verdict's going to be?
I guess I'm the only one still holding out hope and faith for a murder two. But I'm but only because, Carrie, they are women on that jury, and they have children. And I know, as a mother myself, I can understand the reality of having your child go to the corner store and not make it home. So that, you know, those women, those mothers, those parents, they're really considering that. But they may do the lesser, you know, the manslaughter, but I am really hoping that they go with the murder, too. And I, too, like he just said, I think they were throwing everything up against the wall trying to see what stick, and I think they were really reaching for the child abuse, felony of a child, that thing.
Yeah.
I think they were really reaching. But I sure hope he gets murdered, too. And, too, Kara, because they're so arrogant in thinking he's going to be acquitted, and, you know, and then all the black people going to riot. He's going to, and what are y'all going to do? You know, I just want that. I just want that as justice. I just want that. But if they come down with a manslaughter, I will be okay with that.
Wow. Thelma Tormina, what do you think the verdict's going to be?
I have a feeling they're going to do manslaughter because, first of all, they're not going to let him off. There's too much publicity, and it would just cause too many problems in this nation. So,
That's a Casey Anthony walk.
That's four to one, another Casey Anthony.
That's different. I don't think they're going to let him walk. I don't. Do I think it's... the whole thing has been fair? No, I don't think it has been. I think this case has been used, and it's been used really well because it's done a really good job of dividing people. That's what I think.
AJ Houston, since you're on the phone, what's the verdict going to be?
Well, Carrie, I just have a couple of things stuck in the sole of my throat.
I want to hear.
And because I keep hearing one of your panelists. She keeps saying that, you know, she thinks it's this and the case is in the media. But the case is only in the media because the whole sample of police department swept it under the carpet.
Right.
It was
that's
a found
the only
case. They found the crumbs of the case and then discovered what it was. So I don't really think that she's looked at it. I'm glad she's a panelist, and I think that everybody needs to say what they want to say. But you can't have it both ways. You can't say one thing and then say another to contradict yourself. And really what I think as far as the verdict, I think it's really a hard case because of the way the police chief governed the whole investigation.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many things that the defense had their hands tied that they had no clue. They had nothing to deal with except for, but my thing, I thought it was, should have been evident that when you're told not to pursue somebody and you pursue them anyway, that's, to me, that's almost attacking somebody. You're chasing somebody for what?
They don't know you, right?
They don't know you. They just threw that out the window. So how are you going to pursue somebody that you called police 18 times saying that, you know, this guy looks like he on drugs and it's in the rain in the dark and his hands in his coat. And yeah, I see the way he looks. I can tell he's up to no good because he's black and he's walking.
Mm.
So I just have a problem with the whole thing, and I adore your call, and I'm glad you said your piece, but you can't have it both ways. I'm just saying there has to be some cut and dry moment of when you understand that this is a racial trial, and it was swept under the carpet, and it wouldn't have been brought out until other people found it and they put it in the media. That's what brought this whole attention to it, and that's what made this a case. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been a case. It would have been still walking.
We rioted, like he said, in order for it to get attention, and nobody wanted to handle this case. This case went through so many hands in the Justice Department before somebody picked it up and was like, okay, we'll represent this on the state's behalf. Nobody, they didn't want to represent this case.
Why, AJ, did you say what the verdict's going to be?
Well, I was saying that I'm not sure. I think they're going to try. I think murder, too, should be it, but right now, the way it's going, it's kind of hard to tell. Hold on. It's kind of hard to tell. You know, what is going to be or what's happening because of the way it was governed. I think the police department had a hand in however the case comes out because of the information
mm-hmm.
that they had and that they kept to themselves.
I agree. Right. You know, y'all, and I'll be honest with you. When he came out with that piece of concrete today, I was like, okay, really? Did Trayvon Martin really arm himself with a whole sidewalk? I mean, y'all, that was, don't you think, like a little too dramatic, or was it just me?
That, I love that. Let me tell you why I love that so. Because it just indicated so clearly for that jury. if Trayvon was slamming this man's head against that concrete the way he claims he was being slammed against that concrete, he would have devastating, his injuries would be more than what we saw.
Ooh,
it just goes without say. It just goes without saying. There is no way that you get a little scratch like if you bump your head on the corner of a wall, you get a scratch like that, like what he had. We're talking about that slab of concrete that he brought in there and made a big deal about. I love that part. I really did. It just helped.
I wanted to say too. I wanted to piggyback on her because, you know, I think one of the things that people are going to say if he does get convicted of either murder two or manslaughter is that it was political and the jury was political or what have you. But I want to say that the defense committed suicide today. And the defense committed suicide by getting into the courtroom after Deliriando came and made Trayvon Martin an innocent human being who did nothing but go to the store with the intention of coming straight back to watch an NBA All-Star game. And we all know what that means to young black men. So he did a great job at humanizing Trayvon Martin. And what the defense did today was committed suicide by coming back after that and trying to make Trayvon Martin responsible for the fact that George Zimmerman got out of his car with the intention of stopping him or holding him accountable for something that had happened months ago, and he tried to vilify Trayvon. And I thought that slab of concrete was absolutely absurd because Trayvon Martin didn't carry a slab of concrete and hit George Zimmerman in the head with it. And I think that the way that he presented that and then the way the guy came back after him, he pretty much gave him the oop by vilifying Trayvon Martin, and guy was able to come back and capitalize off of that foreclosure.
You know, I think another thing that I found I didn't like was that the state did not object to the way Omara explained reasonable doubt, which I thought I was confused when Omara finished explaining reasonable. I thought, well, what the heck is reasonable doubt now? I thought I knew, but after he explained it, I was thoroughly confused. But when the state got up and started explaining reasonable doubt, then Omara jumps up and says, I object.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so then all of a sudden the judge says, well, you know, they're not going to explain reasonable doubt. Take instructions about reasonable doubt from me. And so there, you know, it was just a lot about this trial that left me very, 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 like, confused about the process because, you know, I don't understand why in this country we spend so much money, you know, with running big trials and fancy, expensive trials for people who, you know, I mean, really look guilty. I mean, and I know that that's not fair because an injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. I get that. But at the same time, I just see, why did we spend all this money and this man had all these inconsistencies? Why didn't somebody say, listen, you know what? Unless your butt wants to go to jail for a long time, you need to be able to explain this. I mean, and it just seemed like to me it was just, I mean, I wrote down about 20 inconsistencies, y'all. I just don't get it. So I'm still trying to understand why there were so many freaking inconsistencies, and yet we got a trial that lasted a month. I mean, so you're sitting there trying to sort through lies and figure out where the truth lies. Let's just start from the beginning. Who pursued who? Who was the aggressor? And I think when we start there, and I think this is something Casey Anthony's attorney said, that the state lost him when they began to change or divert from just that. He was told not to get out of the car. He got out of the car. He was the aggressor. Therefore, whatever happened as a result of what he did, Trayvon Martin lost his life. So therefore, he's got to go to prison because he took somebody's life when he didn't have to get out of the car.
There's no different than being a drunk, reckless driver, in my opinion. If you're going to intend to kill somebody and you're driving drunk and you're being reckless, you're going to serve some time for that. There's a penalty. You can't be reckless with your concealed weapon. Nobody's saying you can't have your concealed weapon. We're just saying don't be reckless, but be responsible. And, you know, he gets out of the car and kills a young, innocent boy. The boy was innocent, and that's been proven. So I felt like I agree with you. There shouldn't have been much more to say after that. But, you know, of course, in our judicial legal system, there's so many details that have to be covered. And I do want to update real quick in regards to the jurors that were responding emotionally. It was actually three women, they said. One of them's face was red, and she was crying, and the other one was shaking while she was crying. Three, that's half of the six. Now, I'm not saying, you know, that's big in my opinion. That is big.
Okay, y'all, the name of this show was George Zimmerman Trial, When the Evidence Isn't Enough. I did not cover the inconsistencies, y'all. Okay, somebody want to start off on what inconsistency they found in the trial that was major? You know.
The major one has to be when he called 911, non-emergency, and he said, oh, shit, he's running. And then when he make it to, hey, well, he really wasn't running. He was skipping. That was huge. That was huge because you said twice he was running.
I agree. What about the fact that Trayvon Martin's hands were found underneath his body when George Zimmerman clearly said he spread them out to handcuff him?
Well, you know, their medical examiner or their expert witness said that, you know, you can snatch your heart out of you can stand there and talk about 15 minutes. Is that what he said?
he lost
total credibility when he said that. I'm thinking this man is dead weight now. I mean, he's laying on the ground in some kind of way. After he's hit the ground, he managed to still put his hands underneath his body and clench his chest. That just didn't happen. Okay, that just didn't happen. That didn't happen. And, y'all, we're going to go over to the 10 o'clock mark just a little bit. A reminder, if you're not listening via the phones, you need to get on the phone lines. We have about 50 phone lines available. But we just got some inconsistencies since the name of the show was George Zimmerman Trial, When the Evidence isn't enough. We want to at least cover the inconsistencies, so at least we stayed on subject just a little bit tonight, y'all. And also, George Zimmerman, he didn't have any grass stains or mud stains on his clothes. To me, that's just major. I'm just sorry. That's just you cannot look at you. His shoes were clean. His clothes were clean. He was clean. His face wasn't muddy. I mean, come on, y'all. No mud, no grass, nowhere, except for a little on his shoes. I think that was just some grass on his shoes. That's just a major inconsistency. Jay, what did you find to be one of the major inconsistencies?
Jerry, one thing is you can fall down when you're off balance shooting a weapon, so you don't have to be close to them. So those marks on the back of his head could come from the position he was in when he shot the weapon.
Ooh.
I've been in the military. I've shot every weapon that the European nation has. So I'm saying I've seen it done by expert marksmen that was just a little off balance. So, you know, chasing somebody and you not thinking about it. So he could have failed. It could have been marks on his head, but that don't mean that he was knocked down. He could have bailed out from firing a weapon.
And can I jump in on the back of him, because I have unfortunately had the privilege of seeing crime scene photos of people who were shot while standing up, and it's amazing how consistent the body position is when someone is shot and how they land. It is, I mean, it's almost 100, well, it is 100% for me. That the body falls forward and the hands fall up underneath of the body. And so when I saw Trayvon's body, that picture, I know for sure that, first of all, I don't believe that they were on the ground when he was shot. I believe that he was standing up when he was shot, because there's no way that his body would be in that position. If he was shot on top of Zimmerman and Zimmerman pushed him off, he would automatically be on his back. So I don't understand. And if he flipped him over, one of his hands would be out. So that was the inconsistency for me.
Wow. Okay, Jay, any inconsistencies you saw?
Oh, you know, I have a whole list. But one of the biggest ones I would say was when they played the interview and that fool said he'd never heard of Stand Your Ground. And then they brought the professor in there. And he was like, what's good, Georgie? Yeah, he made straight A's in my class, and I definitely covered Stand Your Ground. That's in my curriculum everywhere. How you doing, George? You know,
I'm going to hang
here.
I agree. That was a major. You know what? And I think the fact that George told Osterman that Trayvon had grabbed his gun, but yet there was no fingerprints or no blood that showed Trayvon Martin's DNA on it.
Told
Major
him exactly where he had it, right? On the hammer in the tree. He told him exactly where he grabbed it, didn't he?
Yes. Major inconsistency. And, you know,
major.
When George says he rolled up the windows in fear of Trayvon, come on, y'all, you don't say you're in fear of somebody and then get out the car and chase him into the dark.
Mm.
Major, major inconsistency. So, you
he
know,
circled his car three times. Remember that? Don't forget that. He went circled his car. But he never said that on that 911 non-emergency call. He's circling my car. This is third trip around. He never said that.
I think you mentioned too earlier, Kay. He said when he walked back to
towards
him, and then
him.
He changed.
When I walked towards him, yes, he did.
And then he changed it to he was walking toward me.
Exactly.
Isn't that how he changed?
Then it was he busted out the bushes with eight arms like an octopus and banged his head in the cement.
Yeah.
Had his hands over his nose.
Yeah, exactly.
All while he's screaming for help, mind you, with
and
all
grabbing
the blood
gun
that's
that
in
could,
his throat.
And,
he
used his night vision to see the gun. Don't forget that.
The black gun in the dark, right?
The black gun in the dark.
You know what? Major inconsistency, and even the I think this poor guy's gym's going to close now because, you know, everybody just know, ain't no black folks going there no more. The MMA instructor who said George Zimmerman is 0.5 coming in, and now a year later he's just a 0.1 or 1 point something. When this guy had MMA training. I'm sorry. George Zimmerman looks like to me the type person that definitely would have tried to do his best to learn those moves, and I just don't believe a year later he hadn't learned them.
Karen,
you know
I just always called him back up as a rebuttal witness, but then they only got a chance to ask him one question, are you marketing your gym for this trial? And he said, no, absolutely not, no. But did you not know he had this is a gym where Zimmerman trains if you want to learn the fight like Zimmerman on his website?
Yes. I mean, you know, so that guy, to me, had no credibility either. I mean, so, you know,
and
it's just so many things that were lost.
The jurors.
They did what?
Yeah, a zero. He would come
and
in zero.
I think the jurors, because they had to have sense. These are older women we're talking about, too, like in their 60s and with kids. One of them had, like, 8 children. When he came in there and said that, even though his facial expressions, those women are on that stand serious. It's not a game for them. They've been sequestered for however long, and they are, you know, this trial is serious to them. And for him to come up there, and I don't know if you guys caught it, but even his facial expression when he was talking about it, like, oh, yeah, George was a 0.5, and when we got done with him, he was like a 0.6. Like, what? You know, them women, they weren't buying that. They couldn't.
They're
have.
Not buying
they
that.
If,
I have
if,
a
if
son.
If they wanted to. If they wanted
I have a
to.
Son that took karate. He was 6 or 7 years old. He was a brown belt. Who don't know how to throw
Let
a punch? They were sparring and doing everything else. That's totally unrealistic. Totally.
Like Dr. Z, like, you know, you're familiar. I coach step with my children, elementary and middle school age kids. After 2 weeks, give me maybe even 3 at the most. These kids got the basics down pat.
Exactly.
You're not going to tell me a grown man didn't know how to throw punches, but he knew how to assault a police officer years prior.
Absolutely. Okay, y'all, we've given y'all some inconsistencies. I won't be able to get to them all tonight. But listen, I want to thank my panel tonight. Listen, y'all have delivered. I mean, seriously, y'all have delivered. And listen, the numbers have been crazy with these shows, y'all. So thank you so much for being a part of the panel, Ms. Dr. Zoe Spencer, Kay Quinn, Thelma Toramina, and also Jay Corvo. Thank you so much for being with me. A reminder, y'all, that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also, a reminder, y'all, this is what we do each and every Friday night right here on Center Stage. Join us here from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell a coworker to check out what we do. Okay, again, thank you to my panel. Thank you to my guests. I mean, yeah, thank you to my panel. I'm sorry. Thank you to the audience for listening. And we're going to go out tonight with Watoda. From the Nile, they did a tribute to Trayvon, y'all. Listen up. I thought this song was absolutely beautiful, and we're going to play it tonight. And we had another young man whose song we were supposed to play, but he never got it to me in MP3 format, so I was not able to get it on tonight. I had major problems with the computer system tonight, and I had to have it in MP3 format. So I do apologize, and I promise to play it on the next show when we cover this. I'm trying to get into these people to these young folks' song right now. see, we're going to try it. But this show, these are 3 young ladies. I think they're like middle-aged kids, middle teens. They did a song titled Okay, I'm gonna play this song. I promise myself I'm gonna play this song tonight. Anyway, they did a song, a tribute to Trayvon, all about what happened that night, and they were very specific in their music about the incident, how they saw it, how they were standing with the family, and you know, it was really touching because first of all, these are young folks, y'all, and they see it. Like, hey, if this can happen to Trayvon, it can happen to me too.
Mm-hmm,
and so,
mm-hmm.
It just seemed in their music that I felt them. I totally felt them in a way that maybe someone who's Caucasian may not understand. And I totally get that, y'all. I mean, I totally get that. And Thelma, y'all, I hate y'all beat up on her so bad tonight because Thelma came from the heart tonight, and we talk about race all the time. Because I think it's a conversation we got to have more,
mm-hmm.
y'all. And
mm-hmm.
I think she was really sincere when she said what she said. And I think we just gotta have more of these conversations. Okay, y'all. This is Wotoda from the Nile. They got a tribute to Trayvon Martin. Take a listen. Give it just a second to set itself up.
My sister here with no warning. But now our nation's in mourning. We hope that justice prevails soon. The Martin family, we're with you. We come together, we must care. The negative can go elsewhere. I put my hoodie on while weeping. Because the case is so misleading. Right now our nation in mourning. We want justice, and you want it. Thank you.
Tonight too. I'm going to find it and I'm going to play it because I think everybody had a role to play in finding peace in this situation. And this person was very artistic in the way that they presented this. And so I'm going to play this one tonight too. We're going to go out and I promised him I was going to play it. And so I'm gonna go find the song and I'm going to play it as well because I think ultimately, y'all. There's a lot of people hurting, and I think for those that don't understand, it's because y'all never walked in our shoes. I mean, you just you don't understand what you don't understand because you've never been here, and it hurts us because we see Trayvon in ourselves, and we know that if this thing is not fixed according to the system that we have in place, if it's not done right. For this particular trial, then it's not going to be if something happens to any of us as well. So we have knowledge enough to know that the system has got to work in this one or we're all in trouble. Okay, this young man is with Black Market Records, y'all, and he has a song titled Trayvon, I believe, as well. And we're going to play it tonight simply because I promised him I would. And so I'm going to get it on, if y'all give me just a second, to work this and find this song that this young man sent to me about Trayvon. Okay, y'all, here we go. Trayvon, written by Giacovelli 190. Here we go, y'all. Got a few seconds to line itself up, and we're going to. Okay. Give it 1 second, y'all. But this is a tribute to Trayvon by Giacovelli 190. Thank you guys so much for listening tonight, and I hope we said something tonight to inform you about the case. And hopefully in the end, justice will occur.
Rest in peace, Trayvon.
Dream. I can't afford it. They've all been going. Seems like it's out of the way. Since we broke the tie.
coming home again until we see Christ. See what the coward when he stepped in. Release my killer when he did it like I meant nothing. Scratches on his head, blood coming out his nose. Don't compare to my body laying in the morgue. I have friends too, 17, a young dude. About to be a man cut short by George Moo. He had a bad day, I had a worse day. If we don't get him, every black kid is unsafe. This what happened when you give a gun to Satan. Premeditation always lurking, love a grave, man. Ain't no sunshine, remember me, I died trying. If I could help somebody live, then it was worth dying. It worth dying. Rest in peace, Trayvon. Trayvon.
Okay, y'all. That was Jacobelli 190. Okay, y'all, we got to get out of here, but thank you for listening tonight. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.